Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 65, episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, the podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness using the headlines, box office reports, TV ratings, and what's trending on Googs and Social Meds. It's Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. This is a Portmanteau Brian. Courtesy of Trek Gang, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, Miles of Gray it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, technologic. Okay, thank you to Hannah Soltis for that one. Whoop. Daft Punk. Remember that one that was the sampled in that Busta Rhymes song?
No.
Okay, I don't. It was 2006 or 7, I believe. Anyway, so thank you to you for that one. And I always think about that song, Erase It, is always how that robot said it.
Okay. Erase It?
Yeah, you quick erase it.
All right.
Yep.
Well,
that's all right, good I think we know. Can just wrap it up there.
Hey,
all right, see you guys.
It's been a great show. And you can get more stuff like that this weekend live, guys.
Yeah.
We have a live TDZ episode coming to you at SF Sketchfest. It's 11:30 Saturday night. Go to Live Nation or the Punchline website or
SF Sketchfest
or the SFSketchfest.com website. It's 11:30 Saturday night. So this is what you're going to be doing instead of watching Saturday Night Live. Come on, young people who stay up late.
Come on, young people.
It's late. It's late for the
for
oldsters out there. Yeah. But it won't be. I'll be up. I'm going to get up for the show, guys. It's really Saturday night and Sunday morning for the show. And I'm going to be making lots of annoying guy at the sleepover jokes like that.
Church jokes?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, we got to get up for church pretty soon, guys.
Hey-o. Well, we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the very funny writer and podcaster, Courtney Kosak.
What's up, guys?
What's up?
Glad to be back.
Oh, yes.
Hey, we're thrilled to
welcome
have you
back from welcome your travels.
Yes. I'm in from Minnesota. It's a trip to hang out with your family and get some really intense family time and then come back to LA and just be like, ooh, totally different world.
Yeah. Is it snowing over there in Minnesota? Did you get snow up there?
Some snow on the ground.
Mm.
Not while I was there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, you're Courtney Cossack of the Minnesota Cossacks.
Oh, my. I just put. Wow. Okay. I think my grandpa used to work with your uncle.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. We're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about. Really, this whole episode is going to be devoted to apologizing for Monday's episode, in which we told you that The Rock had said something that wasn't awesome, and in fact, he was misquoted, or the quote was totally made up. We're going to apologize.
He said 100% for the record, never happened.
For the record.
For the record.
So, yeah. We'll maybe be able to move on for that, but mostly it's just going to be self-flagellation about that.
Yep.
Yeah, but we recorded it before that came out. We didn't just ignore his
I like if you just stood behind it like, no, and we saw that, yeah, and we didn't believe
we
it.
We still printed it. He's a dick. We're going to talk about the weekend box office. We're going to talk about where our fearless leader, our president, is at these days. The headline on Drudge Report is that his approval rating is at its lowest, and things aren't looking up from here. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the teacher strike in L.A., all that and more. But first, Courtney, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are deep down as a human being?
Ooh, deep down. Well, so I was home in Minnesota, and it super bummed me out that all of Main Street had been wiped out in my little hometown.
Is the Main Street literally called Main Street in your hometown?
It is.
Is it really?
It's literally Main Street.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I grew up in L.A., so these things are so quaint. I'm like, and it's called right. Main Street?
And it's like five blocks long,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But there were four drugstores on Main Street when I was growing up. And now I drove through, and there's zero.
Are they all just shuttered up?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like they're, they well, just boards
or
over
they're
the
like,
windows?
One's like trying to be a gym.
One's oh, okay.
like, you right. know, they're like repurposed into these odd little businesses that aren't
are equally
working.
Not being patronized.
Yeah. So it super bummed me out. And I was like, I was just racking my brain. I was like, oh, what industry could come here to like revitalize this town? And then my mom's like, oh, they're having a little Shark Tank competition. With like, see, you know, like it's just $20,000, but they're like trying to bring businesses into town.
Wow.
Nice.
So
right.
I was searching. I'm not a business person. I'm probably not going to figure this out. But I was like, what are the best e-commerce businesses to start? I was searching all that kind of stuff.
Right, oh, right, cool. right. Oh, because you're trying to bring the money back to your town.
I wish Zeitgang, look into it. Jackson, Minnesota.
What airport do you have to fly into?
I flew into Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That's like 90 minutes away.
Okay.
And is that one of those ones that lands on a lake, like a puddle hopper plane? Or
it's an actual
airport?
It's okay. an actual airport, nice. But it's tiny. It's like the terminals aren't A1 or whatever.
It's one and
it's
two.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And they're also gates, too.
Yes.
And do you think 4 drugstores was maybe excessive? Do you think maybe too many drugstores?
Maybe, but like in the, 10 years prior, that was probably the right amount.
Right.
And then those went out of business. But really, it's Walmart's fault.
Yes.
That's what they do, the Waltons.
Yeah, they do. They just kind of suck up all the resources from a distance. And then, yeah. So is there a nearby Walmart that you do?
Yeah, like 20 minutes away. And I remember the debate about should we bring a Walmart to town.
Yeah, no, for real.
And it's like, yes, you should have. At least you would have something.
Well, but at the cost of, look at all those little drugstores. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because that's
but
the sort of dilemma with a Walmart.
People from 20 minutes away then would be coming to Jackson versus, you
right.
know, instead of vice versa.
Right.
Oh,
right.
You're saying for the Walmart to be in Jackson.
Yeah.
Versus, so now you have
something
to hang
your hat
on.
They were like,
we're
going to preserve this thing. And it's like, that was exactly the wrong mentality.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They destroy all those mom and pop businesses.
Yeah. People will drive 20 minutes away for that super cheap opioids and all that good stuff.
And that sweet, sweet pap.
Yeah. What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated. Okay. I hate to come here and shill for a major corporation, but.
But north of Grumman.
Taco Bell. You guys, it's the best place to get vegetarian fast food.
We were just talking about this. Yep.
Yeah. And they're rolling out their, were you talking about the new vegetarian menu?
Yeah, that you could have different combinations for every day for 20,000 years. That's how varied the menu is now.
I love it.
Yeah. Are you a vegetarian?
Yeah, I've started once in a while I'll eat fish, but yeah, for the most part.
Okay. Did you always eat a Taco Bell? Because, you know, you get that BRC, the bean, rice, and cheese, or bean and cheese burrito.
At El Pollo Loco?
No. You can get a Taco Bell. Like, they used to, that was like the one vegetarian thing you do.
Yeah, no, you can get stuff before. It's always been a great.
But now you're feeling good because they're expanding.
Like, yeah. They're really serving.
Well, shout out to Yum Brands. Isn't that the parent company?
Yeah. Yum. They got KFC.
They got KFC. All the good stuff. They're drinking up water resources in other countries, I'm sure, too. But anyway. What's your favorite menu item at Taco Bell for a vegetarian?
I get a Crunchwrap Supreme with beans instead of
meat.
Wow, that sounds really good.
Yeah.
I never had a Crunchwrap Supreme until Thanksgiving when we were taking a road trip. And Her Majesty was told by a coworker, they're like, yo, if you've never had the Crunchwrap Supreme, get the Crunchwrap Supreme. I was like, I don't know. I had it. I was like, oh, okay, I see what the deal is. There's so many textures.
Right? You can eat it in the car while you're driving. Yeah. No mess.
It's just a handheld disc of artery clogging fun.
What is your favorite fast food item, period, for vegetarians? Is that it? The Crunchwrap Supreme? Just across the board?
Yeah. Well, fast, yes. Otherwise, like Chipotle, you're going to get out of your car.
Right. Well, if you get out of the car, then the world's your oyster.
Yeah. But Veggie Grill, also good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you get at Veggie Grill?
They have little buffalo wraps.
Me too. Yeah. I love the buffalo. The buffalo bomber.
Mm-hmm. All right. Look at us.
What is something you think is overrated?
I am so sick of this KonMari bullshit.
The what?
Maria Kondo? Kondo?
Yeah, what's it? Yeah, whatever her name is that I've seen a million times in the last 5 days.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
I haven't watched it. I
read the book?
I did the Audible of the book. Mm. Uh-huh. And I was like, this should be one page. This is such a simple idea. But I listened to the whole thing. So sad. But yeah, we don't need to do that.
Right. What to
touch every item to see if it gets you a vibe, joy. Just throw your shit away or let it stack up. Like, just live your life. It's
hoard,
too short,
baby. Well, yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense in Japan where space is very limited for people, like in their apartments and things like that. Like, you don't really have the luxury of being able to hoard. And if you do, it's probably like a danger to your safety.
Maybe it's triggery to me because I need to do it.
right. No, and I think that's what it is, though, right? Because also, I could hold something and in my mind be like, oh, yeah, I feel something. It might not be that it brings me joy. It could be that the panic about me, what if I need it in 5 years?
I know. Also, as a writer, I use shit. I go back sometimes and to reconstruct a story a little bit. Like, I want to fact check myself.
Yeah.
And I need some of the paper that's stacked up or whatever.
Do you really? You go back through, like, piles of paper?
So, not piles of paper, but, like, sometimes I'll look at pictures or... Right. You know,
newspapers.
There's just
yeah. I feel like clothing or home items are like easy to get rid of.
But yeah, I don't hoard that kind of stuff.
I'm like, I love history, so anything that has some kind of historical or like value, like in a nostalgic way, I'm like, I can't get rid of that.
Right.
That was the hand, the turkey hand drawing I made in kindergarten.
Right. You still got all newspaper. Of those, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Your desk is covered with turkey hand drawings.
Covered turkey hand drawings, crumpled up old brown shopping bags made to look like deer skins where I did caveman drawings.
And all of your book covers that you made for.
Exactly.
Did you have to do that in public school ever?
Yeah, make your own book covers.
Make your own book covers?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, man, I used to do the comic section.
Yeah.
Or just do the brown paper bag and then draw wild Stussy S's on it.
Well, also with Marie Kondo, so it's a reality show, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that makes you feel worse about yourself, which isn't reality TV to, like, make us feel like better people by watching people treat each other like shit.
Well, I think it all depends on what your disposition is.
Right.
You know, like, you could watch it and be like, oh, fuck, I need to get on this wave.
Right.
Or you could be like Courtney and be like, fuck no.
I'm not watching it, though. But I think the people that it appeals to are, on the self-help tip. So they're like,
How you're wired. Like, I don't mind. I don't need to have everything like decluttered immediately.
Right.
But there are people who the visual mess just stresses them out. And I think for those people, this is the kind of thing that could give them the tools to declutter and shit.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, to each their own.
Yeah.
If you want to be a sloppy hoarder, just sloppy hoard.
And
I will.
Yeah.
Finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true you know to be false?
Okay, so this is my hardest category, you guys. But I would say that rejection is a bad thing, and I'm being totally serious. Did you guys read the New York Times thing that Emily Winters wrote about getting rejected 100 times?
No.
So that was like her resolution last year, and mine was the same. Mine was actually 200, but we calculated slightly different.
Is to experience as much rejection as possible?
Yeah, because just as like a freelance creative person,
right.
Like,
oh, wow.
I'm a perfectionist. And so I was like, I just need to desensitize myself a little and go for it. And it is totally a numbers game. So anyway, it unlocked all kinds of shit last year. I just wrote about this.
Right.
But
and you had a terrible year in your career last year, too. Right?
And we noticed.
Don't rub it in.
That's actually,
yeah, it was actually
first
my
story.
Worst year since I've been. Well, yeah. So what was that like going from perfectionist to like repeated exposure therapy to rejection?
It was just like, oh, this is, it was like a key that unlocked, you know, what my career could look like,
right,
if I just like went for it a little harder.
Right, right, right. Rather than
like
protecting yourself.
I made way more money freelancing than I did the year before. I got way more bylines. I got, you know, I got a byline that was like one of my goal, you know, Washington Post. And, you know,
right,
now I have more of those to get in the future. But I was like, oh, you know, this is more of how I should be pursuing
sure.
it.
Sure. Well, yeah. And you're saying you're pushing back against people who are like, rejection's bad.
Right.
Like, it's
yeah.
terrible.
Well, I had that belief.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think like inherent, right?
The
like fear of failure.
Yeah. I think we're wired that way.
Well, and so many people too, like you look at people, how many people like might stall on their careers till very later in life. And
yeah.
they're like, the whole time I wanted it, I just wasn't there mentally to allow myself to like open myself up to the threat of like, I guess, ego annihilation of being rejected or whatever.
Yeah.
yeah.
Sometimes it is your own self-worth shit that holds you back.
Yeah.
Or like, I shouldn't be going for this yet or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah. Like,
so
I'm not
stupid.
Ready for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, just fucking let the river take you. You know,
exactly.
don't hold on to the rocks along the way because it's going too fast. You know what I mean?
The only way around is through, right? You got to take that
exactly.
Conflict. And did you hit your number? Did you get to 200?
Yeah, I actually.
Holy shit.
Well, I counted, you know, if I followed up with someone and after a couple times, like, didn't hear back.
Right.
That's also
yeah.
a rejection.
No, sure, sure. Yeah.
So I counted those, but I got over 200.
Restraining order counts as rejection. Got like 200 of those. I can't go to Colorado anymore. I don't know.
And you didn't have to, like, cram at the end of the year and just be like, hey, I want $1 million.
It was peaks. No, it was
just to get like some blanket yeah, rejections.
Yeah, yeah.
It was peaks and valleys, but I did like a lot in the spring. Actually, was
Damn.
Maybe my busiest time of getting rejected.
There you go.
So much work to get rejected 200 times.
Yeah. Well, it also changes your process, right? Because you go from everything being a make or break situation, or everything is riding on this one
yeah.
moment or opportunity, to becoming more of like. Having more of like a scientific process and where you're experimenting,
yeah.
we're like, this works, this didn't, this works, this did, okay, and
honestly,
I can sharpen it.
Yeah, but and it's not that many because sometimes it was like the same piece that was going out and it's like
yeah.
for
right.
reasons that I have no control over, that place wasn't going to run it. And sometimes I'd send them out like in pretty quick succession because, you know,
right.
it was time sensitive or whatever. So
that's so great.
It's not like I just... You had 200 ideas that didn't get used.
Yeah,
do you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah,
yeah.
No, totally. Yeah, it's not that you have bad ideas. It's that you hustled your ass off. Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to think. Like, thinking like that helped me get around some social anxiety, just being like, okay, I am learning from this. And every time I'm uncomfortable, I'm, like, getting better at the experience. And so you almost... go out seeking like the thing that you used to be afraid of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That helps you a lot.
Well, there's so much valuable information in something not going right too.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Like if it's going right, you have very little reason to change your thinking or
right.
at least be a little more self-aware or analyze yourself. But
the worst thing that you can do, I think, is like close yourself off to it. And
oh,
that's
yeah.
what rejection normally does. So
yeah.
if you just are like staying
And
open.
Then you just become inert. You know what
yeah.
I mean? If you don't really go and try and expand yourself.
Well, actually, I have to correct you. The worst thing you can do is report on something that The Rock was misquoted on.
okay, I stand corrected.
That is the worst thing you can do because our listeners were not happy with us, which is understandable. It was a bit of a timing thing where we recorded before he corrected the record. But, you know, this is something to always keep in mind, that the British tabloid media is...
They're on some shit.
They are on some shit. They are willing to straight make shit up.
Now, did he... Now, this is the other question we're asking. Do we know what really happened here? Did they Frankenstein a bunch of other things together out of context to make this?
I don't know if he is just, you know, more powerful and so much more likable than the British tabloid press that people are just like, yeah, they probably made it up. Yeah. I'm willing to go
and
with him
like,
on
see,
it.
I handled it.
Maybe they took a different word from like five different sentences to, you know, make it seem like he was being more opinionated than he is. I don't want to judge him at all because, yeah, the media can be fucked up about stuff like this. And The Rock is obviously supernaturally likable. And, you know, there's a reason for that. He used to be a Republican, though, guys. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah, he'd pull up at the conventions.
Yep.
Get the voter turnout hyped.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when they asked him if he was going to run, they're like, as a Republican, he's like, nah, I'm too smart.
Right.
I'm an independent now.
Yes.
But so at least, you know, that's the thing. Like, even if he is a Republican, I don't really have a problem with it because he's not dealing with, like, the fucked parts of being a conservative from what I can see. Like, he's not on some xenophobic shit. If he is on this, like, you know, snowflakeism thing, if it was true and he was pushing back against, you know, the idea that people are just looking for a reason to defend it, that would make me scratch my head a little bit. But
yeah,
I think there's room to be a chill conservative.
Yeah. As my favorite spiritual guru, Kevin Hart, said, we have to make room for people to learn and grow, you know? Mm-hmm. That's so.
Oh, shit.
No, but yeah, our bad. And, you know, now you know that we record Monday's episode.
Also, Jack has a wild elbow sized mark on his chest, bruise.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The Rock found him and delivered the people's elbow on him.
That's right.
In the middle of Wilshire Boulevard.
Didn't say, it was just that millennials are the snowflake generation, right?
Well, yeah, and this other thing of like that all these people fought for our freedom, and it read like just a total like Fox News thinking. Like,
yeah.
And now they're just looking for a reason to be offended about anything, and now it's setting us back.
Yeah.
And it's like, setting us back?
And I was putting it in the context of him calling Vin Diesel a candy ass on the set of Fast and the Furious. But again, I don't know the whole story there. it read. I sometimes occasionally get very intense gym teacher vibes from The Rock, but this, I have no right to bring those vibes up in the context of this story because fuck the British tabloid media. If you haven't seen the documentary Tabloid, that shit is wild by Errol Morris. It's about the British tabloid media and how they will just make up a story basically.
Ooh, should we check that out?
Yeah. Should we talk about the box office? Let's talk about the box office, guys.
What do you got?
Well, my main man, Kevin Hart, was number one against industry speculation. They didn't think the movie would break 10 million, his new movie, The Upside with Bryan Cranston.
I've only seen the poster. It's about him pushing a man in a wheelchair and smiling?
Yes,
that's Bryan
basically.
Cranston. Right?
Bryan Cranston is in the wheelchair. He's playing a paraplegic, and Kevin Hart is his like nurse caretaker. And it's based on this French movie called The Intouchables from number of years back, like five or maybe a decade. I don't know how time works anymore because I'm old. But it was this feel-good French movie. I saw it. It wasn't great. And then I realized that I had confused French with like critically acclaimed because the first movie wasn't like critically well-reviewed.
Right.
It was just like a feel-good movie that did really well at the French box office. But I'm not surprised that this movie did really well. And it got a cinema score. It's just like a audience-pleasing movie that critics don't vibe with.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think with all the news and shit and the state of the world, like people need these kind of soothing films of like, huh.
Yeah.
And they like each other.
Right. And the paraplegic nice. Dude is a billionaire, so there's like wish fulfillment stuff, and they go on all sorts of fun adventures together. There is a scene in which Kevin Hart's characteristic, his comedic sensibility of homophobia, comes through where he's unwilling to even look at a catheter, and or he can't even say the word penis because he's like supposed to, which just the worst nurse ever. But
yeah, what kind of medical professional is this? They're like, right. he is not helping the client with his catheter or anything.
And another way that this movie ties into the news of the past couple of years is that this was a Weinstein company joint that was bought up at auction after the Weinstein company basically dissolved. And it was going to be more of a challenging R-rated movie. And this company that bought it at auction just cut it down to a PG-13, focused on the feel-goody vibes. And they were apparently smart to do that from a business perspective. One thing that we missed last week that I just wanted to raise is that at number 5 on the box office charts, and last week did surprisingly well, was Escape Room, a horror movie about escape rooms.
Wait, what?
Which is...
Like, they were in an escape room that, like, the consequences were real? Like, I'm assuming, will get murdered if you don't get the fuck out of this room.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's, like, Jigsaw shit, right?
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
The Saw movies, which, I don't know, are you guys escape roomers?
I did an escape room in, like, Koreatown, and it was so boring.
Right.
Like, I can't imagine that this was... Yeah, I guess if the stakes are real.
Yeah.
Well, let's the synopsis. 6 adventurous strangers travel to a mysterious building to experience the escape room, a game where players compete to solve a series of puzzles to win $10,000. Just for 10 racks? Okay, anyway. what starts out as a seemingly innocent fun soon turns into a living nightmare as the 4 men and 2 women, good ratio, discover each room is an elaborate trap that's part of a sadistic game of life or death. Let's play a game. Okay, so it's like Saw and Escape Room.
There's actually an episode of Castle, the TV show, that is this exact plot.
Oh, really?
I think that's what it was. It was like one of those real
high stakes escape rooms.
Yeah, that I watched while hungover.
I would play escape rooms. I just have not had the opportunity. All my friends have been playing, but whenever they go, I'm like out of town or doing something else, and I was like, you would love this escape room.
Right.
Because I like puzzles.
You're a puzzle head.
I'm a puzzle fucking creep.
Okay.
Whoa. I've been kicked out of Puzzle Zoo so many times because I'm just so perplexing and puzzling. So, I mean... It appeals to me, but I've not done one yet. But I don't see why, like, just as a concept, I'm like, yeah, go in and flex your brain a little bit and use clues and
they're,
shit. Like
they're very hit or miss. I would say there are sometimes when they are intricately, you know, imagined from the perspective of, like, it's almost like being in a Saw movie written by somebody who's not a Hollywood caliber screenwriter.
Right.
And so they make assumptions about how your mind is going to work with the game that aren't very, like, smart. And,
sure.
Like, I had one experience with Her Majesty, actually, back when we worked together, where we, like, the people kept having to come on and be like, nope, no, you're going to want to think about it this way, like this other completely different way. And, like, basically had to hold our hand through it. And then we're like, wow, you guys did great.
Wow, thanks for helping us the whole time.
Right. Yeah.
I think
you're going to break that if you keep pulling on it. I don't know what the clue says.
Yeah.
I think part of the experience, too, is, like, the performance of it.
Right.
And so if the people that are putting on the escape room aren't very good, it's not very good.
Oh, if they're, like, checked out.
Did you have actors?
Yeah, we had some. Have you done one?
I've done 2, and none of them had actors.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Oh, you were just locked in a room.
Just
and
locked
like,
in a
hey,
room
get out,
with
motherfucker.
Like different clues.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that was yours not. Had...
Well, you had one like, hi, welcome to
Dr.
Faraday's wild scientific lab. If you want to get out, you could be a doomed fate. I don't know.
Yeah.
You got 10 minutes.
It was just sad because we're in LA, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, all these people want to be acting for real.
Oh, yeah.
And then
but...
they were.
I haven't done one in LA, and I feel like that would be the place to do it.
So were people
so much acting
were people giving you like Emmy caliber performances?
No.
Oh. Like even overacting or just checked out like
yeah,
I don't like
kinda,
my job kind of performances.
It was like campy, not in a way that I wanted to watch.
Right.
Well, anyways, escape rooms are a huge wave that we haven't really talked about on Daily Zeitgeist. So
yeah, hit me with like your escape room suggestions, Zeit Gang, so I can whenever we come to your town, someone take me on an escape room date.
Yeah, San Francisco, hit us up because we're going to be there. I don't know if we mentioned that this weekend. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zeit Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. And Miles, I don't know if you noticed, but the top headline on Drudge yesterday morning was Trump popularity at year low.
Oh.
Which that is not good for him, because that, you know, the shit has hit the fan, but now it appears to be slowly leaking into the MAGA bubble. Like, you know, I compulsively check Drudge to see like what the right is thinking. And it's usually like a crazy news story will be going on in the mainstream media. And then on Drudge, it'll be like Trump's popularity pops to 50% because
right,
they only consult this one news poll, Rasmussen. But now it seems like, I don't know, he's even his little MAGA bubble is kind of deflating.
Is it though?
I think it is.
So what is he pulling at?
So, according to 538, it's the lowest since September. So, 538 does a weighted average of all the polls. That's Nate Silver's website. And this isn't the lowest his approval has been all year. He was at, he's at 40.7 approval, 54% disapproval, so 13% underwater. And he was at 39.9 approval, 54 disapproval, so 14% underwater. So he's pretty close to being at a year-long low. But I think the bad news for Trump is that, so the last time he was at this level was after there was just this steady drumbeat of Mueller report news,
right,
that just kept coming out, and Cohen coming out.
Manafort, and, yeah.
Yeah, Manafort, just all that shit where it was people are, that seems to affect his overall, how people are feeling about his presidency. And this seems more related to the shutdown because we hadn't had too much Mueller news until the end of last week. And you know, this is still probably too early for the polls to reflect the fact that the FBI thinks he might be a Russian agent.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, or a Russian asset. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't support for the wall, though, among his base, or it's growing?
Wasn't
that one of the statistics that came out this weekend, too, that it's, like, strengthened?
Among his base?
Or, yeah, in the Republican base, like, they're, and even, it, yeah, they're, like, more for the wall than they've ever been because of the shutdown. It's so fucked up.
Right. Well, it could be climbing because a majority still does not support it, or right. at least of Americans.
Yes,
but yeah,
yes.
I think, well, because as this just becomes more of, like, a little battle in the culture war, it's
right.
like one of those things where, like, they don't want to blink because they pulled up with that energy the yeah. whole election, and now it's – I think also, too, like, Trump is starting to see, like, there are limits to his power now. Like, he – before he could kind of get things moving in one direction or another, but it's clear, like, right now he's tapped most of his political capital to even try and get this done. And I think now Republicans, are, like, at least in the Senate, are trying to figure out, like, okay, mm-hmm. is Mitch McConnell actually going to do something?
Right.
Or is he just going to let this thing keep going into free fall?
Yeah.
But, hey, you know. That's the play they want to run with. They didn't learn from the midterms when they ran on a, hey, immigrants bad message and got just the shit kicked out of them.
In the House.
In the Senate,
it might have shored up a little bit.
But I think even then, right, because there were massive, the district swung the complete other way into the blue column in the House. But I think they just used, like, picking up two Senate seats and defending against Beto O'Rourke and a few other things to be like, they took that to be like, no, we're actually doing well.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see how long they keep doing this. Because what, this is now, it's fourth week? Going
yes,
into the fourth week?
Longest ever.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. And he said at the outset that he was willing to own it. So, yeah, I'd imagine that within his base, you know, there was probably a portion of people who, because he hadn't, like, brought it to the forefront, like, he would mention it in rallies here and there, but for the most part, he was willing to just back burner it, because
uh-huh.
I think people in his administration, and even he, kind of knew it was more of a rhetorical device during the election.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then now he has brought it to the forefront and made it a huge policy issue. And, yeah, Miles, like you said, anytime it becomes part of the culture war, that his base is going to rally behind him. But overall, there appears to be a handful of people who are like, yeah, but you're hurting real
right.
people. And there's just something unmistakably incompetent about
right.
somebody who can't keep the government open when they're
right.
running the government.
Yeah.
And the shutdown disproportionately affects the people that support him most, the states that support him
yeah,
most.
Yeah, for sure.
But let's talk about the revelations at the end of last week that the FBI, after the firing of James Comey, kind of reframed the investigation into, you know, Russian intervention in the election and Trump's relationship with Russia to at least incorporate the possibility that Trump may be a asset of the Russian government. So not an agent. He's not like a secret agent who was brought up by the KGB and trained to, like, it's not that movie shit. It's just an asset means that they have something on him that allows them to
manipulate
his behavior.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, yeah, when you look at it, like, all the things that Trump's done from a foreign policy aspect typically benefits Vladimir Putin.
Right.
From, like, changing, like, the platform of, like, the Republican Party to, like, trying to, like, panic pull out of Syria and all these other things. Yeah, it makes it look like, okay, so, I mean, we know we've accepted that Russia was fucking around during the election to help him get elected.
Right.
And then we see all these people in his orbit were also interacting with Russians for one reason or another, usually for the purpose of lifting sanctions.
Right.
So they can get their money flowing again. And now, yeah, like, when they fire James Comey, the FBI is like, okay, let's check that this guy isn't an actual, like, isn't somehow being manipulated, controlled by Russia in some way.
Right. And it seems like, I don't know, this is not surprising based on, you know, a number of things. His performance at the stinky in Helsinki, as nobody calls it, or the fact just that he's very reliable in terms of his ideas. The things that come out of his mouth seem to be ingested via conservative media, either Fox and Friends or, you know, Rush or whoever it is. But there's also these pro-Russia policies that come out that nobody can really say where they're coming from. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's just like the thing in the word salad of Trump that doesn't totally fit with the rest of the pattern.
You mean like when he was like rewriting history about Afghanistan?
Yes, exactly.
And then what was the other thing he was talking about?
Montenegro is a threat to attack Russia, which was
said that like right after wasn't that right after he met with him in Helsinki to Tucker Carlson?
Yes.
Right.
He claimed that. So this is we talked about this at the time, but Montenegro is a small country that Russia is claiming is a threat to them so that they can kind of, you know, ramp up militarism and be prepared to invade other countries and, you know, start their slow roll across the globe militarily. And the only other person who's really supporting that idea besides Putin is Putin allies and Trump. So the thing I've always heard from people who aren't willing to buy into the Russia investigation is, oh, well, it's not the worst thing in the world for America to have a leader who is pro-Russia in the same way that like Obama was pro-Cuba and we didn't investigate him. But it just seems like there's a difference there. There's no clear aim. There's no clear source of the ideas.
Why is he taking the transcripts?
Right. And
that's too shady.
That is a good point. So can you explain a little bit what that is?
Well, it came out this weekend, I think, right?
Yes.
That from all five meetings he's had since he's become president with him, or however many there are, he's either like sworn the interpreter to secrecy or taking this transcript or both.
Yeah, always takes the notes.
He always takes the notes.
Yeah,
from the meeting.
And they're supposed to be classified, right? Or
yeah.
To a certain extent and then shared with the administration.
Well, yeah, in past administrations, there would be people who would take the notes and then you would release that so people know what the hell was going on if nothing sensitive was being spoken about. So you have an idea of like what the interaction was about. But this one, there's no record of what was said, who was talking for how long or anything. Yeah, and like you said, pressing the interpreter to be like, don't fucking tell anybody what you heard.
Right.
Fuck
that
what you heard.
That is what a guilty person does.
Yeah, no shit. And that's why. And what's wild, though, too, is that it's being hidden from his staff at the highest levels. Yeah.
Right.
Even the closest aides have no fucking idea what happened.
Like, subpoena that, she should testify.
Yeah, that's what they're, I think that's what a lot of people are like.
Yes. The stinky in Helsinki.
Yeah, let the interpreter pull up and be like, what the fuck were they talking about?
Seriously.
Yes.
And they're just sweating, like,
yeah, and there's also the fact that he and people like Kushner have consistently lied about, you know, having back channels with Russia and any communication and meeting with Russia.
Yeah. So, well, you know, he's the president of the United States and he always has our interests.
Hey, but he's willing to face questioning about this because he went on noted Trump adversary Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Noted Trump advocate.
Yeah, so Judge Jeanine's Circus, I think the show is called, on Fox, she asked him straight up if he'd ever worked. You know it's bad when she's asking him the hard-hitting question, but she was just like, yo, have you ever worked for Russia? And let's just listen to his answer because it was a lot.
So I'm going to ask you, are you now or have you ever worked for Russia, Mr. President?
Oh,
I think it's the most insulting thing I've ever been asked. I think it's the most insulting article I've ever had written. And if you read the article, you'd see that they found absolutely nothing. But the headline of that article, it's called The Failing New York Times for a reason. They've gotten me wrong for 3 years. They've actually gotten me wrong for many years before that. Mm-hmm. But you look at what's going on. You know, I fired James Comey. I call him Lion James Comey because he was a terrible liar, and he did a terrible job as the FBI director. Look at what happened with Hillary Clinton in the email.
He still hasn't said no.
The Hillary Clinton investigation, one of the biggest screw-ups that anybody's ever seen as an investigation. And what happened after I fired him, Andrew McKay, Peter Strzok, his lover, Lisa Page, did it. And, you know, they're all gone. Most of those people, many, many people from the top ranks of the FBI, they've all been fired or they had to leave. And they're all gone. This is what they were talking about. And obviously nothing was found. And I can tell you this, if you ask the folks
Nothing
in Russia.
Was found.
I've been
I
tougher
know.
On Russia than anybody else, any other, probably any other president, period. But
He's
certainly the last three or four presidents, modern day presidents, nobody's Still been going. As tough as I have from any standpoint. Including the fact that we're
All
doing
right,
oil like we've never done it. We're setting records in our country with oil and exporting oil and many other things.
Yeah, well, look, so that was not convincing at all because it was a yes or no question and he went on to meander town. Now, in fairness to him, on Monday, he was asked again outside the White House and he was like, no, never.
I don't think my suspicion was, oh, well, he's not willing to lie about that. I just think there's like an unconscious thing where he's like, talking away from the lie and just saying nothing was found. He's just unintentionally betraying himself by continuously referring to it as like nothing being found as opposed to the reality of the situation.
Also, the New York Times is not an investigative body. They're not a law enforcement thing. So they're reporting on what was going on. It's not that they found anything, therefore innocent.
Right.
You know, but I just like how it's such an easy question to go, oh my God, let me start just rattling off some greatest hits real quick.
Right.
Like, I'm the toughest on Russia. Lion James Coney. I mean, Comey. Like,
Coney.
He just sounds, you
know. Coney 2012.
Yeah, Coney 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it definitely, I'm surprised he didn't try and redefine what worked meant. He's like, well, what do you mean work? He's like, I've never worked for Russia. Do I have a check? This is from the Russian Federation? No.
Right.
Have I hooked Vladimir Putin up with some work?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't like the premise of the question.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. I think, but that's the thing, you know, like just like how he said there's no collusion or I didn't know anything about that, you know, like he'll say stuff like that and then walk it back. Always like, well, I still meant that.
Right.
I was just answering that question directly how you framed it to me or posed it to me.
You didn't say we'd pay for the wall. I said that they would pay with tax.
Trade deficit being balanced out, which doesn't. Anyway, yeah, we're going to pay for it.
Yeah. So it's an interesting time to just keep an eye on the president and think even how he's being covered, because I don't know. The media, I think the media has just been overwhelmed by this presidency, and there's just too much for them to keep up with. And so this is all of the information that we're now taking a second look at are things that when they broke, we were like, oh shit, he must be a Russian asset because of like how he was behaving in Helsinki. But it's just, it gets, you know, snowed under by all the other madness. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those, like you said, or it's just, there are so many connections to Russia at every level.
Yes.
You know, that even if, you know, he could very well be an unwitting asset. You know what I mean? Where he very well might not have some kind of real sort of properly articulated agreement with Russia or Vladimir Putin, but just certain things based on like the environment around him, like lead him to certain outcomes.
Yeah, the New York Magazine was speculating that it could be sexual or financial blackmail. And if it's sexual, it probably won't be found out because that sort of thing is kept very close to the vest by the people doing the blackmailing. But if it's financial, he's fucked. So this may be for the first time for the resistance to start hoping there is no P tape, because because that would make it harder for something to show up in the Mueller report. I think the only thing that will ever show up about the P tape other than the P tape leaking is, you know, what we saw in that is what we saw in the Steele.
Who knows? Memo. He might have that shit. You know what I mean? On a little USB drive. And he's like, I have the tape too. I have receipts. He'll know.
That's true.
He's coming to a barbershop near you.
Don't we already know, though, enough now publicly that it's like, if Mueller has any more stuff, I mean, it all looks so bad.
Right. But it's all political. And it's all about how it's being covered by the mainstream media. And I think they are overwhelmed. They're doing their best. I just don't know if they're up for it to convincingly give us reality checks on just how crazy a lot of this shit is.
Yeah. Well, what's sad, though, too, is a lot of people are, there's mumblings that maybe the Mueller report it might be a real anticlimactic report or whatever. And, you know, we've always said we never expected the Mueller report to be like, there it is, game over,
right?
Continue, enter 25 cents or whatever. No, like, you know, I think who knows what it's going to be, but at the end of the day, there's not the political will from the Republicans to hold him accountable, because there were plenty of things outside of the Russia shit that you would have been like, dude, this guy is wholly unfit to lead the country.
Right.
Regardless of whatever the Russia aspect of it is, yeah. Just the decisions he's making with the treatment of people or like the national security apparatus. It's like there's so much shit. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, Republicans don't want to turn on him yet.
Yeah. And it's not just the mainstream media's fault, because he has done some pretty sophisticated things in the creation of the idea of fake news and stuff. But, you know, it's all shit that dictators have done before. And it's like straight out of the Soviet dictator playbook. So, yeah, we'll just keep paying attention. Stay tuned. Yeah, Zeit Gang.
Yeah, stay tuned. We'll have the answers.
Uh-huh.
Or not. Who knows?
All right. We're going to take another quick break. We will be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zeit Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. And the teachers of the LAUSD are on strike.
Yep. Over 30,000.
30,000 teachers. And I don't know, what can you give us the update on this, Miles?
Look, teachers across the country for the last forever, like ever since we've systematically just been defunding education, a country nationwide, have been asking for the same thing, basically. We need dignifiable wages. We can't be coming out of pocket for school supplies and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And it's very simple, right? So specifically in the case of the LA Unified School District, which is the second largest in the nation, The teachers want a 6.5% raise. They want smaller classrooms so they can teach better, more effectively. It's hard to teach a classroom with over 30 students and in some cases 40 to 50 students to give them that sort of individual care, nurturing to actually make sure they are learning. They're also asking for more support staff, like in the form of nurses, librarians. They want to.
Whoa.
I know.
What's next? Champagne breakfasts? Nurses.
And for nurses and librarians, but specifically nurses, like some schools only have a nurse working there one day a week.
Jesus Christ.
And then the other four, the kids, they just have to put a Band-Aid on their broken ankle or whatever.
Right.
They're like, hey, keep it moving. And then there's like, you know, there's an issue of over-testing the students. They want a $500 stipend for supplies. So we're no longer having like people overhearing a teacher struggle on an airplane. Be like, hey, we got everyone on the flight to pitch in $1,200 so you can buy construction paper.
Oh, but that's such a good feel-good story, I know. I love those
stories. Late capitalism, holla. And they also want to make sure that charter schools are being held accountable because, you know, the proliferation of charter schools has just become a huge resource drain on the district. Like $600 million annually is being diverted to charter schools, which are basically private schools being run with public money.
How does that happen? So it's like in the city's budget that $600 million is diverted to charter schools?
Yeah, basically? Rather than to the public schools, because there's some, like, you know, there's the people always say like, oh, it's actually better or even to the quality of education that a regular public school gets. And most research says that it's at best, it's even or worse,
right?
In terms of like the actual education kids get. There are charter schools that do work. But there's this also another dimension to this whole idea of charter schools too, because the superintendent in LA is basically, he is an investment banker with no background in administration of like education or anything. And like, a lot of the people believe that the school board voted him to be superintendent because they want to privatize a lot of the school district here.
Jesus.
And when you look at just sort of like the relationship of investment banking to charter schools, it's wild. Okay. Like investment bankers, they're slowly looking at charter schools and being like, yo, that's a wave. That's something to get your money into because it's money. Okay. And there was an interview a few years ago where this investment banker was on CNBC and they asked like, hey, like, so what's going on? Like, we see that a lot of people are introducing like charter schools into their portfolios. And the quote from this guy was, well, I think it's a very stable business, very recession resistant. It's a very high demand product. Product? There's 400,000 kids on waiting lists for charter schools. And he's talking about Pennsylvania in this case. The industry is growing about 12 to 14% a year. So it's high growth, very stable, recession resistant business. It's a public payer. The state is the payer. If you do business with states with solid treasuries, then it's a very solid business.
Right.
So this whole emphasis isn't even on education anymore. And now like we're starting to see this like portfolio model move into the school district, which is what a lot of the people in the teachers union are like, that's what this superintendent is trying to do with LAUSD. And it's at the detriment to the kids. So, you know, I think the strike was a long time coming. Like talks have been breaking down since the summer and into December. But again, when you look at like people like Betsy DeVos, who are the kinds of people who are like, I don't really know anything about education. I know about making money off education, though.
Right.
That's what the system is sort of moving towards. And that's what they're pushing back against. And, you know, if you know anyone who's a teacher or like most people, we've all been to school. You know how important a teacher is, and the time that a teacher puts in can really make or break your educational experience, can make you grow as a human being. And I can't emphasize enough how important it is that like we're properly investing in this in our education, and not just like we have shit like this going on where people at the highest, you know, income brackets are like, how do we fuck around with education? Make money off of this.
Yeah, how do we make money off of it? It's not like how are these children being, you know, educated the best. It's how do we make money off
And a lot of these schools, they're cash cows.
Right.
So it makes sense for people to invest in that. And that just begins more lobbying money that goes into elections to try and get candidates who support charter school ideas and regulations and things like that. And so it's a very big issue. And I think it's not just in California where, you know, or in LAUSD that's dealing with it.
Yeah. And what they're talking about, what that investment banker is talking about is basically taking taxpayer money and just getting it. Like that going into private hands.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that, you know,
very little accountability.
Supposed people who believe in the market, like investment bankers in the banking industry, like that, That just doesn't feel like the model that they've sold us, where like one like group of bureaucrats decide to like send $600 million to various charter schools so that like iBankers can get rich.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel like the whole best system possible.
Yeah, and when you look at too what the teachers are asking for, they're like, it's really clear, you know, like we need to be paid more for our time. Like we are raising the children of this city essentially.
Right.
And the school board pushes back or the school district pushes back and they're like, well, we're already running like $500 million deficit. We've got people's pensions to pay and retirement plans and all these other things we have to pay. But the union contests that the school district is sitting on about like a surplus of like $1.8 billion or something. So right. Like the money's there.
Right.
And you're using really lame rhetoric and arguments against this. Like, you know, the superintendent's like, oh, they're going to bankrupt the school district if they want it. You know, which is the thing they always say when people want a living wage.
Right.
Oh, well, then, I mean, I don't know how long we can stay in business.
Right.
No, it changes your profit margins. But in this case, I think a lot of it has to do when you know so much money is going to charter schools and things like that. There is a way to solve this. And this is the first time there's been a full-on LAUSD strike since 1989.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Damn.
In regards to the surplus, it's not as simple as like there's just an account with $1.2 or $1.8 billion in it.
I heard the superintendent has a vault full of gold coins that he swims through.
He swims through and spits them out like water.
Right.
And just like
toilet shape.
Have you ever tried, just side note, when DuckTales came out, I remember my grandfather had a bucket of change that he used to put all his loose change into.
Right.
And I remember trying to put like mash my hand through the foil, broke my wrist.
Did you really break it?
Almost. I cried like I did.
Jesus.
But anyway, back to the story. Gavin Newsom, the new governor of California, did have unveiled a new budget with like a huge amount. I think like $1.8 billion going into like early education. But a lot of people are like, yeah, that's definitely a good amount. But it is not enough considering what the needs are of the state. So as of now, I'm not quite sure where the governor is going to come in to, you know, make things better or not. But, you know, as it stands, the teachers are on strike. They got a lot of substitutes in the school right now to take over the teaching. But at the end of the day, man, invest in these teachers because they, man, like I remember the good teachers. They help. Mm-hmm. They help, man. And they've to put your time into teaching kids is so important, and you don't want somebody phoning it in like they work at some escape room they don't get paid enough for.
Yeah. My parents are both teachers. They take it really fucking seriously.
They should. And, yeah, I'm glad. I hope you're like, and they are so lax about it.
No.
They don't even remember the students' names.
I mean, teachers get a bad rap, but they're like passionate about it.
Who gives teachers a bad rap?
What do you mean? They're just not that well respected.
Oh. I mean, I think from a bureaucratic standpoint. I mean, I guess for anyone, you'd hope, right? I guess most people would.
I hear a lot of people say.
They're like, they're paid too much or whatever.
Not necessarily paid too much, but just like that they're not qualified.
Right. Those who can't teach and shit like that.
That's a shitty point of view to take a little bit.
Well, sure. And there are shitty teachers for sure. But I think
there's shitty everything.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who work in places for like a fucking fraction of what they deserve in terms of like their effect on the like incoming generations. Anyway, I love teachers. Shout out to teachers.
Yeah.
Even though you make me use that fucking weird corrective triangle on my pencil because you're like, oh, you're holding your pencil all wrong. I'm like, is my penmanship okay?
Right.
Then who gives a fuck? Stop policing my pencil form.
I look like I have crippling arthritis every time I write because of my shitty handwriting. Because I always took that triangle off.
Took it off.
I'm a warning.
Yo, story. I used to get in trouble because I would slide it up to the top part of the pencil.
Right.
And then the teacher would be like, you have to put your thing back on. And I'm like, look, I'm going to hold it like Wolverine like is clawing a pencil. I had a terrible way of holding a pencil back in the day.
Well, I'm lefty, so I have to like curl my hand all the way around.
Oh, plus terrible grip?
Yeah. Mm. Real weird. All right, let's talk about the big news story of this past weekend.
Yeah.
Kylie Jenner has been dethroned as the most liked picture on Instagram.
Yes.
By a photo of an egg.
Yeah, just a little old egg. A little old egg.
Whose account?
The account is called World Record Egg, and the shit is verified, okay? And it's just people like, hey, on the thing, it just said, it's just a photo of an egg, like a stock photo against a white background. little brown eggs, and the caption underneath it is, let's set a world record together and get the most liked post on Instagram, beating the current world record held by Kylie Jenner, 18 million. We got this. As of right now, it has over 33 million likes.
Those are just votes against Kylie Jenner.
Right. Right. That's what I was thinking. I was like, this is so odd. Like, what? How the fuck did this groundswell of support come out?
The Democrats need to hire this person immediately.
Oh, yeah. They say the person is called Henrietta.
Yeah.
And it's a chicken. I feel like someone tried to interview the account owner and they were being very coy.
Right.
And they're like, hi, my name's Henrietta. And this egg is called, like, Hubert or something. The egg had a name too.
Right.
But, you know, like they say, they're egg gang, if you believe in that. But that makes me wonder, like, is it about people who are just really captivated by the egg, or are there just 33 million people willing to put their likes against Kylie Jenner?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
I don't know, man. That's a beautiful egg. I mean, it's a real close-up of the egg.
I don't know, man.
It looks like it's got freckles. It's cute. I like it. No, yeah, it's clearly just a well-framed...
fuck you, Kylie Jenner post.
People do this all the time on social media. Like the, hey, if you like me this many times, I'll eat my shoe or whatever. But they won at that game. Let's set a world record together and get the most liked post on Instagram, beating the current world record holder held by Kylie Jenner, 18 million. We got this celebration hands. That's just perfectly framed. And you know, they include you, we got this already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
we
yeah.
need this person working on the 2020
wow,
campaign
we
for
got
whoever.
This.
Very, very smart.
4.2 million followers on that account.
Yeah.
Good for the egg.
What will they do next? Everybody's wondering.
Yeah. Oh my God. Please. I hope the egg doesn't get like a weird drug habit or something.
Right.
I've just seen this too many times. I've seen it too many times.
Yeah. The egg is interviewed
for the... It's the only post.
Yeah.
No, that's it.
That's a flex.
It's pure.
And now, like, all these people, there's so many memes around it now. Oh, all right. Well.
I love how the egg is looking for more business opportunities with the email.
Yeah, exactly.
In the bio.
Contact world record egg manager at Gmail.
Yeah, no, the egg is repped by UTA, I think.
Shout out to them. I mean, yeah, when the biopic comes out, it's going to be lit.
I just wanted to shout out to Vanity Fair for putting me back on my original conclusion in with their report on the Havana attacks on the embassy.
Quote-unquote attacks? Noise.
Yeah, the quote-unquote attacks. Uh-huh. There was the scientific study that came out last week about how the noise that they had recorded was almost definitely a cricket, and it was just a type of cricket that exists in the tropics, and therefore, all right. Mm-hmm. I mean, but yeah, so they were hearing it for the first time, and they were like, that must be a weapon, even though it was just a bug.
What about the shit they were experiencing? That's just some psychosomatic shit? But what, remember, because then there was a study that some people had legit damage.
So that's my question. That's the main thing that I want to figure out. And if anybody has an answer to this, Zeitgang. So there is also a New Yorker article. So the Vanity Fair article basically goes through my original conclusion in detail and explains, you know, psychosomatic is not like... It has this reputation as being somebody who's like, you know, secretly knows that they're wrong and are like pretending. And it's not that. It is that it's called conversion syndrome, and your stress is being converted into physical symptoms. You are experiencing physical symptoms. It's coming from stress as opposed to a biological cause. And they also talk about how the event happened, how it was first experienced by one guy who heard the noise but didn't experience any of the symptoms. Then he heard about someone who experienced the symptoms, and that person associated their symptoms with a high-pitched noise. And they were like, well, I heard a high-pitched noise. And so it like snowballed from there. And they do a good job just kind of using the ProPublica study that I had talked about last year that is pretty convincing and does a good job of just kind of giving you a moment-by-moment breakdown of how the thing all happened. But the thing I want help with is the New Yorker also has this report where they basically just dismiss the idea of it being conversion disorder in, like, a paragraph. They're just like, this isn't a conversion disorder, because they interviewed doctors who looked at these people's brains and said there are physical symptoms and it is definitely real. So Those are just two journalistic institutions that I trust, the New Yorker and me. But I do need somebody to kind of explain, or has the New Yorker come out and like talked about this? I wasn't able to find it on a initial Google search, but have they come up with any further reporting on it, or are they just like, no, that's what the doctor told us? I am confused. It's going to take a lot of like, you know, checking reports against one another to see like if there's a way both could be true. So maybe I'll do that. But a detail that this article came out with that I'm a total sucker for was just that it is basically zeitgeist-based, where each generation has their own way that conversion disorder presents. So back in the 18th century, it was like witchcraft or spiritual possession, because that made a lot of sense at the time. After World War I and the Germans' mustard gas attack, people started having conversion disorder that were triggered by smells. And now increasingly people all over the world are being sickened by persistent humming sounds. And so it's like they basically tie it to this overall trend of, because we have all this sound pollution and, you know, are constantly hearing unpleasant sounds, and it is sort of the one sensory input that you can't block out, mm-hmm. like unless you have dope noise canceling headphones, but it's the one that like can get to you anyway. It can invade your home without you. So like there's this inherent anxiety to it. And they're saying that this is part of a wider trend of noise-based conversion disorder, or noise-triggered conversion right. disorder.
And then for us, for millennials, we have the Laurel Yanni type shit too.
Right.
It's another thing where the sounds are overwhelming us and we yeah. don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Just ugh. Completely
the sonic snowflake generator.
Yeah,
yes,
dude,
there you go.
Sonic burnt out snowflakes.
Courtney, it's been a pleasure having you.
Yeah,
as always.
You.
Where can people find you besides Minnesota?
Yeah, I'm back in LA.
Oh, okay, good.
Find me on the streets.
Find me on these streets.
Listen to our podcast, Reality Bites. Sophia.
Yes, okay. I just wanted
Sophia
to make sure. I don't want them to think it was ours.
Is a regular on the Zeitgeist podcast. Yeah. And yeah, Reality Bites. And I'm at Courtney Kosak, Kocak. So.
It's an amazing podcast hosted by two Zeitgang favorites.
Yeah.
So you guys got to check it
and
out.
And then you hear, yeah, we went on too.
We went on.
And I learned so much about Jack.
All right.
And his romanticism.
He got vulnerable.
Wow. He was vulnerable.
Yeah. You guys caught me off guard.
Yeah. We're just like, how you doing, man?
There's a lot of me saying I promised myself I wouldn't cry.
Yeah.
And that's before you asked me any questions.
Yeah, it was really weird.
You're like, hey, we're joined by Jack. And I was like,
but you guys didn't have to talk about sex. And that was the thing, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. I've never had sex. So, yeah.
That was the problem.
Yeah.
Is there a tweet you've been enjoying, Courtney?
Oh, my God. Yeah, let me find it. This made me laugh. Jess Dweck? Am I saying your last name right? She was like, okay, this was the original tweet that she commented on. Police were called to a Texas Walmart after a woman was reportedly drinking wine from a Pringles can and riding an electric cart in the parking lot. And she was
That's
like,
fucking awesome.
Why did Walmart arrest their own mascot?
Oh, man, Walmart has taken some heat this episode, but that is awesome. Miles.
Yes.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray, and again, also at the Punchline this Saturday, 11:30, mm-hmm. For SF Sketchfest. A couple tweets I like. One is from Jabuki at Jabuki. It says, the Instagram egg is of color, and this is a huge win for representation, and I believe it. Also, another one I like is from Patrick Walsh at the Patrick Walsh, because I was just talking to my friend Kevin. We were talking about Mrs. Maisel, and this is a tweet about it from Patrick Walsh. It says, Mrs. Maisel, you're marvelous. Parentheses, laughs really hard at one of Mrs. Maisel's stand-up comedy jokes for several minutes. Simply marvelous. I just love the idea.
Lunatic.
Mrs. Maisel, you are marvelous. Anyway, shout out to Rachel Brosnahan and Noah Gardenswartz, who writes on that show.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien and also at The Punchline. In San Francisco this weekend. It's going to be a blast.
I'm sorry, where are you guys going to be?
This
be
Saturday.
Saturday. Just think of it as Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night actually live, because we will be there in the flesh in San Francisco.
Saturday Night Live. With Andrew T.
Yeah, with Andrew T. Oh, shit, yeah. I almost forgot. All right, a couple tweets I've been enjoying. Ben Shapiro tweeted, glad you're qualified for something at AOC, because she was talking about how she had bartended before and could tell that she dealt with old, overweight assholes all the time. And she was like, I can tell we're getting under her skin. Ben Shapiro tweeted, glad you're qualified for something. And then Jesus tweeted, she's still not going to fuck you, Ben.
Oh, that's right. Because before he was like, I want to debate you.
Right.
Yeah.
Not happening, dude. And then at Kibblesmith tweeted, hear me out. If Batman is canonically about 32, then he was born in 1986. And if his parents were killed leaving a movie theater when he was 10 years old, then there is a very real possibility, return, space, that they were seeing Space Jam. Think about that, man.
Wow.
Whoa.
That would be wild.
Yeah.
If they rewrote it like that, and he just, like, he couldn't look at any kind of Warner Brothers cartoons. Right. Or, like, was his name Michael Jordan?
Yeah.
I almost said Magic Jordan.
There was an R. Kelly song in that.
Yeah.
The movie, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I believe I can fly.
Yeah. One of the greats. Why? What happened with R. Kelly? Jake.
They better not been watching
JK
that movie.
J.K. Rowling.
What a funny joke. All right. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song Ride Out On. Miles, what are we going to ride out on today?
Let's go out on the artist, the band, Fox Warren. I love Fox News and I love Elizabeth Warren, so this felt good. Anyway, this song is called Everything Apart, and just a good band track. You know, they start off a little off rhythm. You don't know where the downbeat is, and then it comes in. You're like, ooh, we're going off the beat. Anyway, that's for all you rhythm people. But yes, this is Everything Apart by Fox Warren.
Oh, also, I wanted to just mention another tweet. At Real Donald Trump tweeted yesterday morning, getting ready to address the farm convention today in Nashville, Tennessee. Love our farmers. Love Tennessee. A great combination. See you in a little while. And Jordan Fabian responded, he's going to New Orleans today, not Nashville. So, you know.
We love you, San Diego.
All right, we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. We'll talk to you guys then. Bye.
Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.